kanka.
Yes, man. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Great.
And not this man. Not up yet.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening, Hanok.
How are you, Jasmine?
Good.
Are you the only one or the others?
No, somebody else is there. Malka
is there? Okay. Do either of you have any questions for tonight?
I have one.
Go ahead.
A discussion we had earlier about Adam and Eve. They were hours old. How about Satan? Was he just hours old as well, or was he from ancient times?
Malka, I don't understand the question because it's like it's breaking up, or it's just not clear to me. So please try again.
I can hear her either. It's...
Okay. The earlier discussion we had, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
I just can't make out what you're saying. But go ahead.
The discussion we had earlier about Cain and Abel, about Adam and Eve, they were only hours old, okay?
Correct.
Satan, how old, was he hours old as well, or was he from ancient times?
Satan is the head angel in the heavens. That's why he has 12 wings, 12 pairs or 6 pair of wings, and the archangels have 4 pairs of wings. Satan is the leading angel. He was the first species created. There are 10 species of angels. Just like the human species, there's Adam, and then it breaks down into additional angels. Well, there's species of angels as well. There's 10 different species. And Satan's species is the oldest, if for lack of a better description. But he is God's right left-hand person.
Okay. So he kind of knew how to do the seduction of Eve, and knew that she would fall into that seduction.
Yes.
Because he wasn't a baby. He was from ancient time. He was first,
correct,
like you said, the first. Okay.
He had life experience. He had wisdom. That is correct.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Second question. I think we touched on this last week or maybe the week before about we discussed about Cain's descendants still on earth earlier. And we're like, we don't know which side we come from, correct? Because of it's been lost. The family generation of just family tree, for that simpler word, has been lost because we don't know from which families we came from. And we talked a little bit about the DNA to try and find the ancestors and or the territory that we originated from. And then we also talked some time ago, it's been a while, about when the Mashiach comes, he will know us by our smell, which is the amino acids. Is that correct? Did we discuss that, or did I read that somewhere?
No, we did discuss it. I did mention that when Mashiach comes, he will tell which tribe, he will tell which nation based on smell. But it's not amino acids. It's pheromones is the term that science uses for this. What you smell is something called a pherom.
Spell that, please.
P-H-E-R-M-O-N-E. Actually, P-H-E-R-O-N-E. Pherom.
Okay. Okay. So, this generation that we're in now, we really do not know if we come from the right or the left side.
Well, most people do not know whether they come from the right column or the left column, which nation they come from. The Jewish people who come from Jewish mothers, they know that their soul is coming from the tribe of Yehuda. The lost tribes, they're living amongst the other 70 nations, and they've become assimilated, so they do not know that they have souls connected to the children of Israel, and they don't know which tribe they belong to, and they don't know which nation they belong to. And I recently was reading a commentary or listening to a commentary on a video that basically said that it no longer matters, that there is something called the plan of creation, which is God's plan for why he created the physical world, why he created humanity, and that this process, he created the 70 nations literally so they'd be busy with each other instead of attacking the children of Israel. That there's really only two nations. One is the children of Israel connected to Moses, and one is the 70 nations that is connected to Bilam. And eventually every human soul will become connected to Moses and become connected to the children of Israel. But the plan of creation was, as the children of Israel correct themselves and grow spiritually, they bring the other 70 nations along. And that the purpose of why there's not just one nation is, if there had been only one nation, that the all 70 nations would be part of that one, would be one nation. They would never fight among themselves like they do now, and they would not allow the children of Israel to grow properly. They would make the children of Israel suffer worse than they have made them suffer over the generations. And that ultimately they wouldn't have grown because they would have been so busy defending themselves against the one other nation composed of the 70 nations. There's a critique you can make of that, because obviously Hashem will protect the children of Israel. So if the 70 nations would have been constantly criticizing and pushing the Jewish nation to do its job more so than they needed to do, and that they actually did it throughout history. We just have to have the trust in Hashem, and that would have developed more quickly, our trust in Hashem, so that we wouldn't have made many of the mistakes over the centuries that we did make. But anyway, that is the commentary that this particular gentleman, the rabbi, is portraying, that there's really only two nations, that it was split into the 70 nations at the Tower of Babel for the purpose of making the other populations of the world busy with each other and not paying attention to the children of Israel. And only when the children of Israel are not doing their spiritual work would they be forced to, and be given, the other nations would be given permission to attack the children of Israel. And that in our current generation, there's no longer a need to keep the 70 nations apart. And that's really the process of the world coming together and stuff and so forth. And the reaction of the 70 nations that people are speaking about, this right-wing reaction of Brexit and Donald Trump's election and all of this, is related to people wanting to remain in their comfort zones, which is having all of the different nations as opposed to having the one nation composed of the 70 and the other nation being the children of Israel. Have I confused you?
No, I'm just fine. Thank you.
Have I answered your question? Do you have others?
So, since we don't know from the right or the left side, we just have to walk in the knowledge of the written word. So that...
Well, based on that discussion, you don't need to know what nation you come from. You just need to know that you need to study Torah. You need to choose whether to be a child of Noah or a child of Israel. And that is a choice. You don't need to know which of the nations you come from, because the purpose of that is connecting to your... the nations, the 70 nations, really is a way of understanding personality traits, and character traits based on the cultures. But you don't really need to know that anymore. But I don't mean to dissuade you from, there are ways to find out what your personality traits are, and that defines the nation that you come from. And it isn't necessarily the areas of the world as defined by DNA and science today.
So,
I'm getting a deafening silence.
How do you find out your personal? How do you find out your personality traits?
You ask dream questions and a series of dream questions to get there, or you can ask your friends what personality traits do I have? And you ask yourself, what have I absorbed from the culture that I grew up in that makes me who I am and how I'm relating to that? And are those personality traits, character traits, all appropriate based on energy, not necessarily morals and ethics? In essence, you study Torah until these things become clear to you. You study Torah till the tree of life becomes part of you. And the simplest way is what the verse in Psalms says that many synagogues have over their ark. I haven't memorized the verse, but the gist of the verse is keep the name of Hashem in front of you always. Say again?
I think that's Psalm 16.
It's in from Psalm 16, yes, but it's a specific verse in Psalm 16.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, you know, when you brush your teeth, are you thinking about Hashem? Most people are not capable. They're not trained to do that. And those who are trained to do that from their religions generally are told to be humble, but they're not taught to be humble. And I'm not implying anything in that statement. You should not take that personally. I'm just generally speaking about the way people act. There's something called false humility. And, if you are acting with false humility, you're separating from Hashem. So even though you're thinking about Hashem, you're not. You're not making the connection. This is what the sages have taught us. This is the wisdom that they teach us. That if you think you know something, you don't. There's more to know. There's more to understand. You need to relate to it differently. I have a student who is very active in energy healing. And we have discussed quite frequently that the energy healing is the cause of a lot of the chaos in that person's life. But for her, the energy healing is an idol. Why? Because she's not willing to let it go. I've suggested not to do energy healing for a week, and then let it grow to a month, and then let it grow further. She's not willing to do that because she doesn't agree. And what's truth for her is truth for her. Doesn't mean that I'm right and she's wrong. It means we're both right. One of us is a right column soul. One of us is a left column soul. How do I know that? Because I know who I am. And when somebody is innately disagreeing on subjects that are clear from the sages, not because the sages are right, not because the Talmud is right, but because it's in the Zohar, which is the soul of the Torah. And the Torah, as I've explained, means the word Anochi is an acronym for I write my soul to you. That's the essence of the ten utterances. It's the essence of the Torah. That's what the Zohar is teaching us on many, many different ways and levels and explanations. The same system, if we wanted to use as an example, the same electrical grid that is in the United States doesn't work in Mexico. Why? Because ours is based on a certain level of wattage and theirs is based on something else. But in the spiritual world, the negative system works and uses the same energy system that the positive system uses. And we need to follow the recommendations of the Torah to avoid using that system incorrectly. Now, I'm not saying that everything that's written in the Talmud is on that level, but I'm saying everything written in the Torah is on that level. And much of what's written in the Talmud and everything that's written in the Zohar is explaining, clarifying, and providing you with that energy tools. Anything else? The deafening silence, Baruch Hashem. I did receive a question, but I would need to check if Daniel is on the line or not. I don't think so. So I have received the question, which I will read by email, and then we'll see if it prompts any other questions from anybody online.
Okay.
Daniel's question is about why we say Hashem Melech twice and not once or four times. And he is expressing in this email his readings, one of which he says is Rabbi Yosef Chaim, who is a Sephardic sage, the Ben Ish Chai, describes how it could be said twice, once for the soul and once for the body, and that we should stand when we say it. And another clarification of what he, of this question that he read, is that it's twice for the body and the neshama, which is the same that the Ben Ish Chai is saying, once for the soul and once for the body, is once for the body and once for the neshama, because neshama is a level of soul. But he's then asking, what about the ruach and the nefesh, the lower levels of soul? Are they included in the neshama when we say it on that level? And this was raised in a class that I gave, and I mentioned, I think it was one of the very cheap classes we've been doing, and I had mentioned that we say Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch twice in the morning prayers. And I explained that these three, Hashem Melech, Hashem is king, Hashem Malach, Hashem was king, and Hashem Yimloch, Hashem will be king, Leolam Vaed, forever and ever. And I explained that when we say these three, we are unifying time, the past, the present, and the future all become unified, just as the three columns become unified in the central column. So Daniel's asking the question, why do we need to say it twice? Why not just once? And the answer to that relates to the structure of the tree of life. But I'm going to use our body as the metaphor of the tree of life, because truly our body is built on the 10 sephirot, which is the tree of life. And we have a right arm, a left arm, and a chest. The right arm is the right column, the left arm is the left column, and the chest is the central column, which includes aspects of both. But then we have a diaphragm that separates between the upper body and the lower body. And we have, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in the Orthodox tradition, and primarily in Chabad, they put on like a belt right around their diaphragm as a separation between the upper body and the lower body. So if we look at the body as being Zeran Pin, we have the upper level, the upper triangle, so to speak, as in the Star of David, and the lower triangle, where we have a right leg, a left leg, and the sexual organ. So you have these two triangles in the body. You have these two levels. And this is why we say unification of the three twice. Once for the upper body, the upper three sephirot of the lower seven sephirot, meaning Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, and the lower body being Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. And that's why we say Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Imloch twice. And it finishes with Leolam Vayet. But it's also unifying time. Time in the physical world being the lower world, and time in the next higher world, which is Zeran Pin, which is the world Olam Yetzirah. And we are taught by some of the modern Kabbalists that in our world, time runs in one direction and time runs in the opposite direction in Olam Sefirah, Olam Yetzirah. So the question he's asking also is, why don't we say it four times? And that's because we're dealing in the world of Olam Yetzirah. We're dealing in the level of the upper triangle and the lower triangle. We're not dealing in the level of Yud-Heh Vav-Heh. And there is a relationship between Yud-Heh Vav-Heh and the Tree of Life and the two triangles and the Shield of David, the Star of David, which is definitely related to the Tree of Life. All these are different metaphors for the protection shield that is Hashem. And we have a very deep question in the Parasha Bishalach in chapter 14, verse 15, where the Jewish people are at the Yam Suf ready to be killed by the Egyptians behind them, or drowned in the Yam Suf in front of them, or torn apart by the angelic hordes called wild animals on either side of them. And the children of Israel broke into four different groups. And there's a midrash that explains which are the four groups. But essentially, the question is, you don't know what to do in your life. You cry out to God. That's what you're taught to do in Sunday school. That's what you're taught to do in every religion. Cry out to God for help. And God's answer is, Mati Tachalai. Why are you crying to me? Move forward. Do something. And it will all work out. But standing still is never your answer. Sometimes you can pause. You can stand still momentarily, but never permanently. This is why we say it twice and not four times. Because we're connecting to the two levels of protection, the upper triangle and the lower triangle of the Star of David. We're connecting to Chesed Gevura Tiferet as a triangle, upper triangle in Olam Yetzirah, and Netzach Hod and Yesod as the lower triangle in Olam Yetzirah. So I hope Daniel finds this answer satisfactory. And does anyone have any other questions?
That was very profound. That was such a great teaching.
It was a good question. The questions you asked, Marco, have been good as well.
I always thought our bodies were like the tree of life. I mean, doesn't the circulation come from your feet and go up into the body? I mean, we're kind of built like a grand tree.
Our body has 10 sephirot. Our body has the 12 tribes.
Also, it's how, when the Jewish people had to wear the star on their clothing to be identified as Jews. And you just said that star was protection. How does that relate? I mean, they actually had to sew that yellow patch on their clothing during the invasion in Europe. How does that all connect?
I'm not sure what the question is. You're asking about the yellow star that Germany made the Jews in Germany wear?
That's correct.
So your question is, why did they wear it?
I know why they wear it, but why did they pick the star? Germany made them.
Well, if you really go back through the history of the Star of David, according to the academic Jewish philosophers, the Star of David only was always there but not significant until around 1300-1400. And the reason that the Jews accepted wearing the star is they rationalized it by saying, well, it's one of our religious symbols, so there's no problem. We're proud to wear it. And that was one of the arguments that the community had to accept wearing the star.
Doesn't that go back a lot earlier, like in the 600s, didn't they? Where didn't
it goes back even further than that, but it wasn't a significant part of the discussion until around 1300 to 1400.
Okay.
Because it was the Star of David, the understanding of its relationship to the Tree of Life only was developed through the Kabbalists in Spain, which was from about 900 to 1400. So what we say, you know, we're constantly bombarded with this idea that what we know today, what we think is important today, was always important. But it's not true. There's a process of development. There's been a spiritual growth of the whole level of humanity. But in essence, no growth has taken place on a whole total level, because we're still falling to the desire to receive for oneself alone. And while we think we're higher than the older generations, in truth we're the same. We're still selfish. We have not gotten rid of it. We don't go and kill people. We don't go through crusades to liberate Jerusalem. We try and do it through diplomacy, and we think that that's a better approach. But as long as we have this idea, I'm right and they're wrong, we're corrupting the whole process. Because you're saying to the Creator, this diversity, this diverse creation you have made, I could do it better. Because I'm right and the other people are wrong. I'm right, and I don't need all these insects. I'm right, and the animals that are wild shouldn't be in the earth. There's all these different things. And I heard we destroy 25,000 species of things, animals and plants and insects here. So there's much to learn. We have not grown as far as we think we have. And the premise is, when you have to learn to accept that I'm right and the other guy is right. And you have to learn to appreciate that God created him or her for a purpose. And its purpose is not to be killed by you. His purpose is not to be controlled by you. Any other questions? Welcome to the joyful month of Adar. Shalom to everyone.
Shalom. Thank you.